Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. As the headlines continue to chronicle new lows in business behavior, we have no choice but to rethink corporate responsibility. A new book by Jeffrey Hollander and Bill Breen, The Responsibility Revolution, How the Next Generation of Business Will Win, offers a roadmap for re-imaging companies from within, innovating new ways of working, instilling a new logic of competing, redefining the very purpose and possibility of that business. Jeffrey Hollander is chief inspired protagonist, executive chairperson, and co-founder of Seventh Generation, an organization that addresses social and environmental responsibility at regional, national, and international venues. Welcome to Edgewise, Jeffrey.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
To begin with, can you talk to us a little bit about Seventh Generation?
Seventh Generation is 22 years old, started in 1988, and we were green before green was something particularly good to be. The terminology didn't even exist back then. We started in business selling water and energy conservation products through a mail order catalog, and in the catalog created the Seventh Generation brand of household products. Then in 95, sold the mail order catalog to focus exclusively on the Seventh Generation brand. And the Seventh Generation brand is non-toxic, natural, environmentally responsible household and personal care products, dish liquid and laundry liquid, as well as tissue paper and paper towels, diapers and baby wipes, and feminine care products. The company, over the last 10 years, has grown at an average rate of 30% a year. And we have benefited from this increasing focus on sustainability and green products.
Your book is called The Responsibility Revolution. Can you explain this concept to us?
The Responsibility Revolution is really a call to action to say that the scattered incremental efforts of most companies will not create the kind of success that will be required in the coming decade. Corporate responsibility has been the subject of increasing dialogue and focus. More and more CEOs are talking about it, but in our opinion, it has failed to come close to having the impact that it needs to have.
Now, why is that?
Most companies pursue corporate responsibility in a compartmentalized, programmatic fashion. They might do a little more philanthropy. They might make their packaging a little bit greener. They might give away a little bit more money. But none of these things by themselves create a really responsible company. To create a responsible business, you have to take a holistic, systemic approach to everything the company does. It is just not okay to do something good with your right hand and bad with your left hand and think that no one will see what you're doing with your left hand. You need to bring responsibility and sustainability and make it part of a strategic approach that encompasses everything the company does. The companies that will win are the companies that embrace responsibility as part of their business strategy.
Well, it seems like a different definition of sustainability. Could you expand on that?
Most people mistakenly think sustainability is an environmental issue, and it's not. There's a lot of people living on the planet, and having fresh air and fresh water is great, but it is not enough. Sustainability also includes issues like justice and equity, human rights, all things that impact and create a healthy society as well as a healthy planet. It's not just about being green. It's about looking at the whole relationship between business and society as well as business and the planet. How do you interact with your local community? How do you act with the NGOs of the world? How do you treat your customers? How do you treat your consumers? You cannot have a sustainable, responsible business if you don't treat your employees well and you don't treat your customers well. That's obvious good business, but it is really part of looking at sustainability in a holistic sense.
And I would think that approach ensures long-term survival for the business.
Absolutely. We just published a white paper on the business case for sustainability filled with statistics about how sustainable companies attract better talent and retain talent longer. If we look just over the last year at how business fared in a very tough economy, in 19 out of 20 sectors in our economy, sustainable businesses outperformed non-sustainable companies, generating an average of $650 million of incremental market value over their less sustainable peers. If we look at the statistics from Fortune magazine, the best companies to work for, the best companies to work for are also the best companies to invest in. If you had invested in the 100 best companies to work for when the list was first made, you would have earned twice as much as the Dow Jones average over that period of time. So there are many statistical indicators that sustainability is good for business. And it's interesting how businesses insure their fixed assets. They buy insurance for real estate, for inventory, for all of the things they have on their balance sheet. Their reputation, which represents 75% of the value of the average American company, is something you can't buy insurance for. But if you behave in a responsible, sustainable way, you can protect that reputation. Business still doesn't understand that it should invest an equivalent amount in being responsible and sustainable to protect its reputation and brand as it does to protect its fixed assets.
All right. In your book, you use the term authentically good. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Business historically is used to sending out a press release, believing that press release will control the message and the information about the company. Well, those days are gone. The message is created by your employees, your consumers, the media, NGOs. And in order to be an authentic company, a trusted brand in an environment where everyone is contributing to that brand image, you have to move beyond talking about all the wonderful things about your company. That's not a bad thing to do, but everybody knows that companies do terrible things. Companies make mistakes. Companies have problems with their products. And as a corporation, if you want to be authentic and you want to be trusted, you have to talk about not just the good, but the bad and the ugly.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yep.
So what should organizations do?
At Seventh Generation, we publish an annual corporate responsibility report according to the Global Reporting Initiative guidelines. And in that report, we talk about all of the places we've fallen short, all the mistakes we have made, all of the things we said we would do that we didn't do. Now, when our lawyer reads a draft of that report, he can't understand why we would say anything negative about our business. I've tried for years, and he's slowly learning, to help him understand that we can't create an authentic brand unless we live in a see-through world and we create transparency about the mistakes that we've made. For example, the letter that introduced our corporate responsibility report 2 years ago was about the most painful experience we ever had as a company when we found that we had a very, very minuscule amount of a carcinogenic ingredient in our product. And we talked in great detail about how that happened, why we didn't deal with it sooner, why we weren't more proactive. Instead of trying to hide it, we talked about what we learned from making that mistake and how we hope that we'll be better in the future. But it's unusual. Most corporate responsibility reports open where the CEO or the president talks about some wonderful program they're conducting in Africa, saving the lives of poor children or purifying water or doing something great. Well, consumers are cynical about business, but when they see a business that's willing to talk about its shortcomings, they see a business they can really trust.
I can understand a see-through attitude at the top management level. But how do you communicate this to the other parts of the organization and see that it's practiced?
In some respects, it is the non-senior management that's the best guardian for our brand. Senior management is more inclined to look for the positive spin And it is usually everyone else in the company that knows first when they're avoiding dealing with a difficult issue or focusing on a mistake. So when I was CEO, every 6 weeks, I would invite anybody who wanted to sit down with me and ask me any question they wanted to ask. They would challenge me. They would say, how come we're not disclosing this? How come we're not telling people on our website that we're actually paying this spokesperson we hired? How come we aren't disclosing that we're considering doing business with Walmart? It was the company at large that really helped us be authentic. You can only do that, though, if you give them voice and you create a safe environment for people to speak. You encourage them to speak their mind and create an environment where people know they won't be punished for saying things that are critical of management and critical of the company. From my perspective, those are the people you want to reward and celebrate.
Exactly. Your company has a great reputation, but it's not limited to the green factor at all. For example, it's well known for its innovations and a collaboration among the workforce.
Absolutely. We believe that responsibility and sustainability will increasingly be drivers of innovation. It was our focus on responsibility that led us a long time ago to reformulate our laundry products to work in cold water because we wanted to reduce the CO2 emissions of our consumers when they heated water to do their laundry. It's also true, as we were talking about before, that to create a collaborative work environment, a sustainable, responsible company, besides attracting the best talent, gets the most from the talent they have. Because people feel they are stakeholders. Every single employee we have is an owner of Seventh Generation. 20% of the company is owned by the employees. We have historically given 1% to 2% of the equity in the company to our employees every year. That sense of ownership means people don't behave as employees. They behave as wanting to maximize the value of the company they are partially an owner of.
Right. So why is it important?
It's one of the biggest concerns I have about business in America, because with so much value going to senior management, investors, hedge funds, and everybody else, I don't think employees generally get the value they create from most companies. And most important, if you look at research about employee-owned companies, for example, the Financial Times published a study a couple of years ago that showed that employee-owned companies financially perform better than companies that are not owned significantly by their employees. And at Seventh Generation, we have a salary cap where my salary, CEO's salary, can't be more than 14 times the lowest paid person's salary. You can grow a company very successfully with salary caps in place. You just attract very bright people who care about things other than just simply making the most money they can make. But interestingly, when my salary is so tightly tied to the lowest paid employee, I pay a lot of attention to what our lowest paid employees are getting paid.
There's a new norm in corporations now, and certainly one of the things is the leadership and management compensation. We've heard this talked about many times, but increasingly, we're seeing it actually happen. The executive is conscious of his salary and what his people are being paid. And so there is equity there.
We're making some steps in that direction. We need to do more. One of the stories we tell in the Responsibility Revolution is about a company called Linden Labs. They distribute bonuses in unusually democratic fashion. They distribute 1,000 points to every employee in the company. Each employee awards those points to anyone in the company based on who they think did the best job and created the most value. It creates a tremendous recognition, and they can give it all to one person. They can do anything but give it to themselves.
Of course.
In most companies, Seventh Generation included, the higher you are on the ladder, the more and bigger your bonuses. This creates the opportunity for people throughout the company that have done extraordinary things, witnessed by people other than senior management, to receive some terrific financial rewards. While many companies might not choose to do this with 100% of their bonuses. Certainly doing that with part of the bonus pool is a way to create a more participatory, democratic culture where people feel more empowered to impact the future of the business they're working for.
We've been talking about having companies develop a corporate consciousness. What's the first step to this? How does the average company start to build this kind of consciousness and social responsibility?
It comes from a couple of directions, and you absolutely want to look at the numbers and the statistics and understand what the business case for this is, because it won't go very far unless you can understand the value and the incremental value that being responsible will create for your company. Beyond that, it's a cultural challenge. Instead of having a director of corporate responsibility, we have a director of corporate consciousness. Being a more conscious company is in part about being a more humble company. It's in part recognizing that you don't know all the answers, that you need to look at things from a systems perspective and see the unintended consequences of things that you do. And usually the first and most important step is to do a corporate responsibility report that maps out for you what your impact on society and the planet is. It's basic things like how much water and how much CO2 are we using and emitting, but also what's happening in our supply chain. How much do we know about employees' treatment in a contract factory? Do we know where the raw materials that go into our product are coming from? So this report will give you a snapshot of your impact on society and the planet. And from that, you can begin to create a game plan. You can begin to say, okay, we're going to prioritize these five issues, not because we think it'll be a better marketing story, but these are the five biggest negative impacts we as a company have. These are the places that we're going to focus on mitigating that negative impact. These are the places that we're going to focus our innovation efforts to develop products that don't have these negative externalities. You then go about setting goals.
Can you give us an example of that?
Sure. Seventh Generation had decided over a decade ago to use plant-based materials in our cleaning products instead of petroleum-based materials because plants are renewable, petroleum isn't. To our dismay, we discovered about 5 years ago that there was so much demand for palm oil. Rainforest in Indonesia was being cut down. The burning of the forest was emitting a huge amount of CO2. What was a good decision at one point was no longer a good decision. And we wouldn't know that unless we were studying the impact our supply chain has on the planet. And it allowed us to innovate and switch to, we were only one of two companies in the United States that switched to sustainably harvested palm oil. It allowed us to create a product difference that distinguished our product from other products. It only happened because we were reporting and analyzing the impact we have on an annual basis.
I would think that making these changes also ensures a longer life for the company.
Absolutely. When we look at the companies we studied in the responsibility revolution, and those companies range from large companies like IBM, European companies like Novo Nordisk and Marks and Spencer, to smaller companies like Organic Valley, which makes organic dairy products. In almost every case, the sustainability strategy and the responsible aspects of their business have helped turn their business around. In IBM's case, it was not doing well. In Organic Valley's case, it has helped them become the number two producer of milk. They're now a $500 million company. We not only document why being responsible leads to financial success, but we look at the specific things these companies have done to build community, create transparency, to involve their stakeholders and consumers in helping their innovation process.
Exactly.
But it's not enough to be responsible and sustainable. We have to perform along the same financial metrics as every other company.
Jeff, do you have any parting thoughts you want to leave our audience with?
The goal of the responsibility revolution is to give people examples, principles, and stories they can apply to their own business. whether they're a huge multi-billion dollar company like IBM or a teeny startup like Etsy, which sells crafts made all over the world online. And I think the challenge around consciousness, unlike many of the changes businesses are used to making, involves the way they think about their business, the mindset they use to see the world. One of the things the book tries to address is how you need to think differently, not just act differently, in order to really become a responsible business.
We've been speaking to Jeffrey Hollander, co-author of the new book, The Responsibility Revolution: How the Next Generation of Businesses Will Win. Thanks for being here today, Jeff.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Join the American Management Association group on LinkedIn to share insights with hundreds of your management peers and to discuss practices in the areas of organizational management and leadership. To find us, simply search for the group American Management Association from your LinkedIn account. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.